Hey guys, I'm Adam Rapport, and this is the Bon Appetit Foodcast. All right, before we get to this week's show, I want to give a shout out to our amazing new BA series that launched last week called Making Perfect. You can find all 5 episodes streaming on our OTT app, which you can get on your Apple TV or Roku or whatever sort of smart TV you have at home. And the first 2 episodes of the series are also on YouTube right now, with a new one coming out each week. For the first time ever, all of our test kitchen editors collaborated on one recipe, in this case, the perfect pizza. So check it out now. All right, for this week's episode, we've got on senior staff writer Alex Beggs talking with BA contributing writer Priya Krishna, who just released her first cookbook. Indianish is what it's called. It's a collaboration between Priya and her mom, with a bit of influence from her dad as well, whose Indian-American recipes she grew up eating in Dallas. They combine the traditional Indian dishes of her parents with the food they all came to love in America. Beggs and Priya discuss how she wrote the book, involved a lot of recipe testing alongside her mom, and how it's one piece of a bigger conversation of the giant landscape of Indian food. Oh, also, and you can check out Priya on our YouTube channel, the Bon Appetit YouTube channel. She's filmed several of these videos for her recipes. I think the most recent one was for roti pizza, and she is an absolute natural on camera. So I highly recommend that you check them out. But right now, let's go to the show.
Okay, Priya, what does Indianish even mean?
Well, first, I feel like it's worth noting that I kind of hated the title when I first came up with it. I literally didn't know what to call this book. I remember like sitting in my bedroom and writing down everything from like cool mom recipes to like cooking with spite, like just like really lame stuff. And then I wrote Indianish, and underneath it, I wrote better title TK, which in like editorial speak means to come. And in all of the interviews that I did with potential publishers, I was like, don't worry, like Indianish will not be the title.
They were like, we love it.
Like, this is amazing. Like, we love this title. It perfectly encapsulates what this book is all about. And I think I ultimately realized that not only did Indianish perfectly encapsulate this food of, you know, roti made with pizza and sag paneer made with feta, but it also sort of encapsulated our identity, this idea that we look Indian, but we act very American, that we listen to top 40 hits intermixed with the latest Bollywood hits and wear our kurtas with jeans. Like, it all just sort of felt like the perfect word to talk about my family's identity. So it stuck.
So how would you describe the recipes in the cookbook?
I'd say they're all rooted in Indian flavors or something vaguely Indian, or even just like an Indian person that I know who made it, but very much feel like they have a hand in American culture as well. You know, not even American culture, like in my family's experiences as well. There's a ribollita stew that my mom had at a farmhouse in Tuscany, but she sort of zhuzhes it up with green chilies and ginger, things that are more traditionally Indian.
And there's a recipe based off a P.F. Chang's dish, too.
There's a recipe based off of a P.F. Chang's dish. Yeah, because my mom, when she was like working late and had dinners with her coworkers, her favorite restaurant to go to was P.F. Chang's because she loved their like tofu, their Asian tofu wraps. And so she recreated a version that's like sort of more Italian leaning. So it's sort of this like totally like it's like Franken lettuce wraps essentially, with like pulling from like P.F. Chang's already sort of semi bastardized Asian cuisine. But mom's like, let's throw in some basil and tomatoes and garlic.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your mom, who is incredible, and she's sort of behind the recipes in the book and helped you kind of get them all on paper. And your dad is also a major player, crucial dishwasher. So I feel like I know your family really well, / want them to adopt me, but I feel like the readers aren't out there might not know them as well. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what they're like?
Sure. Let's see. My mom is extremely put together. She, like, all of her clothes in her closet are never wrinkled. She's one of those people who, like, everything is just always in a in its place. Like, you open her drawers and her lipsticks are like organized by color. Like, she's one of those like annoyingly like organized put together people.
Yeah.
Like, she always notices when my earring is like slightly, the Hindi word for it is like dera, I guess crooked. That's
kind
the name
of
for it.
Yeah.
Like, she just always like notices when things are out of place, when like my eyebrow could be, my eyebrows need to be threaded. Like, she just notices these little things, but she's also incredibly caring. She remembers things about people.
And she's an engineer.
And she's a software programmer now. She's sort of more of a manager. So she manages a team of software engineers at a company called Intuit that makes the tax software I'm currently using to do my taxes.
Oh my God. Oh yeah. I haven't done that yet.
Right. Taxes.
So that sounds like a pretty intense long hours type of job. So when you were a kid, was she working and then coming home and cooking dinner too?
Yeah, and she had 20 minutes before my sister and I would explode. Also, keep in mind, my mom worked in the airline industry, so she was traveling a ton. She was gone a few weeks out of the year, which sort of brings me to my dad, who kind of ended up being our primary, the person I spent the most time with growing up. And my dad is like, my parents had an arranged marriage. And it's almost as though the people arranging them thought like opposites attracted, because my dad is the polar opposite of my mom, where my mom is sort of serious and considered. My dad is goofy and off the cuff. And like, my mom is very deliberate about the friends she makes. My dad is literally friends with the guy that like sprays pesticides on our plants. One time in college.
Oh, yeah, Poison Joe.
Yeah. His name is like Bob. One time in college, my dad and I were FaceTiming, and he had to go do something. And he was like, I'm putting Bob on the phone. And he put our like pest control guy on FaceTime. And I just like sat there and talked to him for a while. And I was like, all right, so.
A little insight into your dad's social life.
I mean, he's just like a total goofball, and I love that about him. Like, I feel like I've told you so many stories about him, like the fact that he wets t-shirts and puts them in the freezer. We live in Texas where it's really hot in the summer, and then he slowly sort of like peels the t-shirt, puts it on, and then goes for walks with this like frozen wet t-shirt. And the idea is that it serves as like natural air conditioning.
He's an innovator.
Yeah.
How long are these walks that you need?
They're like 3 miles, which takes my dad like a good, like about an hour. Yeah. So it's so funny because my dad's always talking about like the crazy characters he sees on his walks. Like, there's the woman with her dogs and the guy who's always on his cell phone. And my dad, meanwhile, is in his wet t-shirt wearing a straw hat and like headphones with an antenna sticking up. And I'm like, you are the character. Like, the guy always on his cell phone or the woman with her dogs are like totally normal things to be doing when you're on a walk.
And your dad is not, your dad's not too shabby of a cook either.
My dad's
signature recipes.
Yeah. I think my dad has sort of things that he's boiled down to a like repeatable algorithm that he's very good at. Like, he's been making our family's yogurt for several decades. He like has these very clever names for things, like Dad's From Scratch Pasta, which is store-bought Prego sauce doctored up with buttery cumin seeds. Nothing about it is from scratch, but it's fine.
He's self-aware. So we've got like your mom, creative. She kind of thinks of food like with a lot of freedom. Your dad, he has his formulas and his predictable things.
Yes.
So what was it like shooting the cookbook and testing all the recipes? Like, tell me about what was one day of recipe testing like in your Dallas kitchen? Whole family plus aunts and uncles. Right?
Yeah, yep. So testing was, it was like a really dark time in a way, because it was just, I had to cook 6 recipes every day, and it was just me, my mom, and my dad. My mom would be gone for work before I even woke up, but the night before she would have like written down 5 new recipes, because I landed in Dallas and she'd only written down 20 recipes, so she was on like a very quick schedule to keep writing recipes that I had stuff to test. So I'd wake up in the morning. I usually, this is so sad, I would like go to my high school gym, which is because we get a free membership for life. I guess, for like paying tuition at my
the gym is so nice at the high school.
Yeah, no, it's a super nice lifting gym, and I would like lift some weights alongside my like old computer teacher and like Senora Tapia, my Spanish teacher.
They're so proud of you. Did they tell you that?
I like kind of just tried to ignore them, yeah. Or I would just like give them a quick wave. I just didn't feel like launching into why I'm living in Dallas for a month.
They were like, oh, Priya, she's living with her parents. Too bad for her.
Yeah. Ex-boyfriend's now the volleyball coach. Saw him.
Oh, man.
I don't think he listens to this podcast. It's fine.
I like how how this book just like kind of steeps you in nostalgia, like even from the point of like your morning, like you have to go back in time in so many ways.
Oh yeah. I mean, even just being in our kitchen, like I grew up basically sitting on our kitchen island doing my math homework, watching my mom cook. So me being the one getting the pots and pans out, heating up the ghee, putting cumin in it. Honestly, like my mornings, I was almost like a zombie. Almost all of my mom's recipes start with like heating up some fat in a pan and throwing in onions or garlic. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like a zombie who just like heated up onion. Like sometimes I got to a recipe that didn't involve doing that, but I would just like heat up the oil anyways, dice the onions, and I'd be like, oh, this doesn't call for onions. I'm just doing this as a force of habit.
So she's at work. You're putting onions in fat.
It's like 9 o'clock in the morning.
Your dad is at his walk yet? I don't know.
My dad is literally, he's like peeking into the kitchen every 30 minutes being like, is there food ready? And then he's like, can you make this? And I'm like, no, dad, I have a schedule.
Right.
And he's like, okay, but why don't you make this? And I'm like, no, nope. I can't. Like, I literally pasted the schedule on the fridge, like almost like a little like lunch, like a cafeteria menu. Like, yeah. Dad, here's what we've got on slate for today. If you don't like it, that's too bad.
Yeah. And then what would happen? So you were cooking, taking notes, and then your mom comes home from work.
Yeah. Around 5 o'clock, my mom would come home. And usually, like, my dad was really good at giving feedback as to, like, how similar to my mom's recipe this tasted or if he had any thoughts. He was surprisingly good at this. So I'd make, like, a few recipes and we'd talk through them on his break from his walk and his work because my dad works from home. And my mom would come home and we'd usually serve her the 3 or 4 dishes I had made that day. Then I would make 2 with her. So I'd usually choose ones where the technique was a little bit tricky. I had a lot of questions. And that's kind of when, like, the chaos ensued because it would inevitably come to light that what my mom wrote down is not actually what she meant. And this recipe calls for cardamom pods, but cardamom pods are nowhere to be found on the ingredient list. So she would be, like, sneaking in cardamom pods. And I'd be like, it doesn't say that in the recipe.
You can't do that.
Or she'd be turning the heat up and down willy-nilly. And I'd be like, there's no way we can explain that to people in a recipe because my mom just intuitively knows when to turn the heat up and down. So this was when my mom and I would just kind of like start yelling at each other. I know it never escalated too much, but we definitely had a lot of arguments. But I think that's to be expected. Like when you're working with your parents, it's like good in the ways you expect it to be good and bad in the ways you expect it to be bad.
And then how many hours, when would the night wind down?
Like late, because then we'd be done at 10, and then usually from like 10 to midnight I'd be doing my other work and responding to emails, so sometimes I wouldn't go to bed until really late.
But what time did Ritu open the wine?
Oh, like as soon as she got home from work.
from five to o'clock 10. Yeah,
in fact when she came home before I'd always be like, okay, I have things for you to taste, she'd be like, no, she'd like put her hand up, she'd go into her bedroom, she'd like take off all her makeup, like put on her like moisturizer, put on her sweatpants and her like, you know, whatever her like her evening outfit is, and she'd pour a glass of wine, she'd like take a few sips, then she'd be like, all right, what do you need?
I love it. And you know, we were talking a little bit about all the notes she would give you, and you and I were talking about how many revelations you had about your mom and the way she cooks, and specifically how ingenious the sag feta recipe is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of maybe our readers and listeners are really familiar with sag paneer, so maybe you could walk us through how that recipe breaks down.
Mm-hmm. What makes that recipe so good is, one, my mom's spinach gravy is fantastic. Not all spinach.
Is spinach gravy a term?
I mean, it's like the best way that I can describe
stewy spinach.
Yeah. Like it's just called sog in or technically balak in Hindi if you're talking about spinach. But yeah, spinach. There's no, I mean, I'm not going to call it a curry because I hate that word. Mm-hmm. So spinach gravy is, or spinach sauce, I guess, is the best way I can say it. My mom is all about spicing her, not over spicing her gravy. She usually chooses like two or three really like powerful, like bold spices and starts with the whole versions. And those sort of end up being the key flavoring components. Like my mom is not the kind of person, this is the case for a lot of home cooks in India who have like four different masalas, each with 10 components. My mom is sort of the belief that start with whole spices, freshly toast them in oil, only use a few, and then grind them. And that's much better than using like a prepackaged masala or like masalas that you have around. So the spinach gravy is the first ingenious part of that. Second is my mom putting a chonk over the top. You don't always put chonk, which is like spices tempered in oil over the top of sag paneer. Right. Like if you've ever had it at a takeout place, like
no.
They don't have like a beautiful layer of oil and spices over the top. That's like trick number two. Trick number three is the feta, which was something sort of partially my mom not being able to find paneer and also my mom going to Greece and having like those salads with those huge hunks of feta and just falling in love with them and just seeing the connection between like, oh, spinach gravy, sag paneer, it makes sense. And I realized that really the fundamentals of my mom's dishes are just building like multiple layers of flavor. That's why her dishes taste so good. It doesn't require a lot of effort, but she's very, very good at building flavor. So you have like your, with that sag feta, you have your layer of cumin and coriander. That's like layer one. Then you add your onions and your ginger and your garlic. That's layer two. You put your spinach, you make that into a gravy. You add the feta.
Which doesn't take long. It sounds like this like long cooking thing.
Really easy. This like, I think this is probably like 25 minutes start to finish. Mm-hmm. Then you've got your salty, briny feta. That's another layer. Then you make your chonk with this like rich, nutty ghee, smoky cumin seeds, some red chili powder. You mix it together. You pour it over the top. And now you've got like these multiple layers of flavor, this complexity that you thought you would only get from spending hours and hours over a stove. She just has figured out how to do that in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I remember when I made it, I felt new to chonk or the concept of it. What other things should I be putting that on when I'm cooking?
I mean, all Indian food, honestly, like any sabzi, a combination of sautéed vegetables. I put it on top of all of my dals as a sort of finishing element. I've also discovered other non-Indian uses. Like I put it on nachos and it's amazing. Mm. You can just like grill a steak and put it on top of that. I'll make sort of these, I'll just make like a sambal noodle situation and put it on that. Like that sambal pork noodle dish that Chris Morocco just developed, chonk would taste amazing so on that. Yeah.
Because tell us what it adds.
It's just like a top layer of richness and complexity.
But the way that I liked the crunchy element, like and getting the texture, a few crunchy
yeah,
seeds.
No, the texture is really nice too.
So good.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about chonk right now. I never thought in my life that I'd be talking about chonk as much as I'm talking about it now, that it would become this fixture of my book. It was just this everyday thing. My mom would say like, you know, chonk lagade, and that was like a signal that dinner was almost ready and it was time for me to set the table. That was as much as I cared about chonk growing up. It meant that dinner was almost ready.
Right, it's just like salt and pepper.
Yeah, and now it's like, it's a thing.
Thing, thanks to you. Okay, so if I were to do a dinner party out of Indianish, what would be a good menu?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, what we did for our BA, our cookbook club, when we did Indianish was honestly perfect. Like putting out some chutney cheddar, onion roti pizzas to start, and maybe some Indianish baked potatoes that are topped with sour cream and chaat masala and ginger and onion and cilantro would be amazing. That'd be a good starter. For the mains, I guess for everyone in the room loved the chili peanut rice, which is just, that's another sort of flavor layering masterclass from my mom. It's sort of like limey rice topped with onions and peanuts and curry leaves and mustard seeds. So that
someone described it as tasting like buttered popcorn. Yeah. It was so good. So that was only a part. Was that just the flavor from the ghee coming through?
Yeah, I think I've never gotten that taste before, but it was amazing. Like it was honestly like among my favorite versions of that dish that had been made. I would make that. I would make the sweet and sour butternut squash, the gaddu. It's this just amazing. I don't even. It's like this sort of tangy, sweet squash dish. You never thought you could do this with squash, that kind of thing. I would make the red pepper potato peanut sabzi because it's quick and flavorful. I would make the sog feta, of course, because I like having like a saucy gravy thing. I would probably make a dal, probably Priya's dal, which uses kali masoor lentils, which are these sort of chubby, buttery lentils that taste like you've added cream in them when you make them into dal, but there's nothing in them, and they have chonk on top. I would make kachumbar, which is like an Indian salad, just chopped up beets and cucumbers and avocados, topped with this dressing that's just lime and chilies and raw garlic and salt.
So fresh and acidic.
Yeah. And then for dessert, I would make shrikhand, which is strained, really strained yogurt with cardamom and sugar. And you put threads of saffron on top and it stains the dish in this really beautiful way.
Right. I remember that one was so beautiful and bright on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Ritu also, speaking of throwing a dinner party, has a lot of great entertaining tips. Mm-hmm. Can you share a few of those?
Yeah. Actually, one of them I alluded to earlier, which is that when you come, this one I always follow, which is when you come home from work, immediately change out of your work clothes. Like
I fling my bra across the room.
Yeah, exactly.
As far as away from me as possible.
That is essentially what my mom does when she gets
home.
Good,
I'm glad.
And it makes you feel more relaxed. And I find this to be 100% true. My mom loves, for as long as she has lived, she has always invested in nice pottery, even though she couldn't afford it. Because when she could only afford to make like dal and chow and rice for guests, she would serve it in beautiful pottery and it would look a lot nicer. So that's something I've really taken to heart. I have like certain things that I always serve food to guests out of to make it look a little bit more impressive.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So there are a few recurring characters in the book, some who I know well, others I don't. So I was hoping you could describe these spices as if they were people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So cardamom.
Cardamom is sort of that really friendly, can fit in with multiple friend groups kind of person. Like where, you know,
you can have it in a dessert.
Yeah,
and then.
Yeah. You know, like those people who can sort of like kind of float around with any crowd. That's sort of how I see cardamom as a.
In what dishes are you thinking about?
Like I'm thinking about how it tastes. It's the main flavoring component in both sag feta and in shrikhand. It has this plays like an intensely savory role in one and an intensely sweet role in another.
Totally.
It's like a shapeshifter.
I love it in the quinoa kheer as well.
Uh-huh. I love it in the quinoa kheer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Who is chaat masala?
Oh my God.
This is
masala,
your best friend.
Yeah. Chaat masala is like literally my friend Mega, my childhood best friend. She is chaat masala. She's just like a total weirdo, but like so it works. She's so endearing. It just is one of those spices that it has a lot of really pungent ingredients, but it doesn't care. It's like that that person that wears print on print and is like, I'm going to make it work. And it totally works. That's Chaat
Masala.
And
what are your favorite places it appears in the food?
I love it in the Indian-ish baked potatoes. You just bake potatoes and top them with sour cream and Chaat Masala and cilantro and onions. And they just sort of add this
explosion.
wonderfully salty, funky element. It's so good. My mom also... In case you didn't know, the British colonized India for a period of time. So Indians eat a lot of sort of classic English breakfast foods, and one of them is baked beans. And there's
the toast.
Yeah, there's a recipe in my book for baked beans that my mom basically doctors up with sautéed onions, surprise, surprise, and Chaat Masala, and they're so good.
Okay, who is cumin?
Oh, cumin is sort of that timeless. Real pal, but like, you know, you're not sure if you can, maybe you don't know cumin super well, but like you kind of see him or her everywhere.
It's familiar. Yeah. It's always kind of a background player.
Yeah, exactly.
Turmeric. I said that weird.
Turmeric.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people took the R out. What happened?
I don't know.
When did the R disappear?
I have an aunt who says Washington every time. I can't. It drives me crazy.
When I'm on the phone with people, they'll say turmeric, and I'll say, and turmeric, and they'll be like, so turmeric.
Look at you trying to change the world.
I don't understand.
Okay, so who is turmeric?
Turmeric is the really shy person, but that's like sort of always everywhere. Like, you know, in Hey Arnold, that guy Sid, who whenever Helga would profess her love for Arnold, he'd be like in the back, like sort of breathing really heavily. I would say Turmeric is that guy.
Did not think we were going to talk about Hey Arnold today. Okay, and then my favorite, asafoetida.
Asafoetida, also known as hing. H-I-N-G. I didn't even know it was called asafoetida until a few years ago. I would say asafoetida is sort of the short kid with a huge personality, you know, very unassuming, and then they open their mouth and they're hilarious. But this sort of takes a little bit of prodding. You wouldn't know that on first blush.
What does it add to a dish? Can you give us an example?
One thing that I told you and that I think I wrote about in my column is that to me it makes Indian food taste Indian. Mm-hmm. It sort of adds this sneaky, like almost onion and garlicky undertone. Like it's not something you can taste right at the top, but it's something that kind of lingers in the back of your throat. You're like, oh, I can still taste this dish 10 minutes later. And that's usually the hing you're tasting.
And what recipe comes to mind as where it's absolutely essential?
I mean,
you have to make it optional in the book, right?
I made it optional in the book because it's definitely one of the harder ingredients to find. But I think that if you can get it, you should absolutely use it. Like, it is an essential ingredient in dal. I would say it's what takes dal from being just, you know, like an everyday like lentil soup that you might just be like, oh, this just like tastes really healthy, to something that actually tastes like it is something really interesting, something you really want to eat, something you come back to for more
bite
spoonfuls, and you're not just like, oh, this is just a homogenous, like healthy soup that I feel obligated to eat.
And you can find all of these ingredients, if you think they're hard to find, online, but also at Patel Brothers, the grocery store you wrote about, I feel like maybe a year or two ago?
2 years ago, yeah.
And it was one of my favorite pieces you've written. It was just so vivid, and it's such a special store with such a great backstory, and the photos we have are fab. But what should be in my shopping cart at Patel Brothers?
I was just thinking about the part of that story when I interviewed my dad and got him on the record to say that he steals snacks out of the Patel Brothers, like, bulk bins.
You can't do that. Yeah.
And there's like the quote from his,
he
like,
puts them under his hat with his shirt.
The quote is like, technically it's not allowed, but no one minds.
That's not how stealing works, Dad. So the bulk bins are good.
The bulk bins are great. Like, they're ready-made snack mixes, which are usually like little like chickpea crisps coated in Chaat Masala with, you know, other sort of fried bits made of potatoes and chickpea. Like, those are so
crunchy,
good.
Salty
and they
things.
Literally come in like these big barrels. You definitely want that. I would definitely say get It's called burdi powder or chutney powder. This is basically a powder made of crushed up lentils and chilies, and you mix it with ghee or olive oil, and I put it on roasted veg. I put it on noodles. I'll make idlis and I'll have it with that. That's traditionally how it's eaten. I was just in India, and I think for 7 days my body was like mostly made of that chutney powder because I just ate it every single day. Like I would drizzle it on yogurt and eat it. It was so good. I would say that. Definitely frozen rotis. My parents buy like rotis like a dozen at a time from like in these packets from Patel Brothers. They're so good.
They also make them fresh there, right?
They make them fresh in a roti machine.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But they freeze some of them and put them so that they, because rotis like kind of mold easily. But mm-hmm. if you freeze them, it just, they'll last forever. Then also I would stock up on produce at Patel Brothers. The produce is cheap and really high quality. Like I've never had such good tasting cauliflower as the cauliflower at Patel Brothers. And it makes sense because gobi, which is what it's called in Hindi, is like a building block of so many Indian dishes. So yeah, definitely cauliflower. Cauliflower is my dad's favorite vegetable and he never leaves Patel Brothers without at least 3 heads of it.
All shoved under his shirt. He loves it.
My dad is not a shoplifter for the record. He pays for most things, just not his snack.
Does he also do this in Whole Foods with the Olive Bar? There's always someone who's
so actually in there. My dad, when I was really little and over the summer, my parents didn't know that summer camp was a thing. So oftentimes it was just me and my dad at home. And my dad would say, do you want to go eat lunch at Costco? And that meant we would just go to the different sample stations.
Wow. Okay, so... So I think some misconceptions about Indian food are that it requires this like overwhelming amount of spices, which your book disproves. You know, there are a couple key ones in certain ingredients that a lot of the recipes come together in under 30 minutes. So what are some other misconceptions you think people have about Indian food? Which is a very big question.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's so many that it's really heavy, that it's not good for you. Mm-hmm. Indian food, like any cuisine, has lighter fare and heavier indulgences.
But it's like, your book is practically vegetarian.
Yeah, yeah. It's not, you know, there's maybe 4 meat dishes. Mm-hmm. And this is not to say that Indians don't eat meat. There are many regions of India where they eat meat, but India is not a monolith. And every, like, you know, eating in Punjab versus eating in Kerala is like being in a totally different country. So I think that's really important. I think America, we haven't fully explored or understood that heavy regionality of Indian cuisine. And that's something that I really hope that more chefs will start doing. I hate that, you know, actually Khushbu Shah wrote about this for Healthy-ish, about how nowadays it's like Indian food went from being like food that made you poop like crazy to this like wellness obsession. And I wish we would find some sort of middle ground with Indian mm-hmm. cuisine where it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't this thing that could help align your chakras and it wasn't this thing that made you have horrible diarrhea. Like my experience is somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. And yet I can't go a few weeks without a white lady talking to me about turmeric.
So tell me about turmeric.
It has existed. It is one of those things that had existed in Indian cuisine and been grown in India. It's a root for like thousands and thousands of years. Like it's been around for a really long time. Indian kids for all of eternity have hated when their mom mixed turmeric with milk and forced them to drink it when they were sick. This is also known as haldi doodh. And now they're marketing these as turmeric lattes. And all of us Indian kids are laughing as like yoga instructors are paying $5 for this thing that we used to just fucking hate when we were kids.
There are proven anti-inflammatory effects of turmeric when eaten with food. I was interviewing Sanjay Gupta recently mm-hmm. Who had it on his new show, and he kind of dives into a history of Ayurveda, which was really fascinating because that's kind of like where all the white ladies are getting like this like snippet of info that, oh, it will do X thing.
Yeah, but I think
it comes from a long, complicated.
And they don't understand like to activate turmeric's health benefits, you usually have to either heat it up or mix it with dairy, which is how it's consumed in Indian cuisine. Similarly, turmeric's health benefits comes from this characteristic, this ingredient in it called curcumin. And the curcumin content of most turmeric that we get in the West is so really faded. Low because it's so old. So spices. I would suspect that most of the turmeric lattes being served in cafes, you're not actually getting that much of the health benefit of turmeric.
And then we were also talking about sort of the mislabeling of curry, which we are a victim of here at BA because it's just like this SEO term.
I just hate it. It's so annoying because I even see Indians use the word curry to describe their own food because they're sort of just at a loss of how
else to get.
So tell
us what a curry isn't.
I mean, curry is basically just an empty word that it has roots in Indian cuisine, but it was sort of taken by the British as a blanket term to describe anything stewed in a sauce, which describes a lot of dishes in Indian cuisine, except that all those dishes have specific names to them. So instead of people learning the names of those dishes, this entire cuisine with this incredible diversity got reduced to this single word, curry. Mm. And it has just driven me crazy for as long as I can remember.
So how did you address that in the book?
I have like a fake FAQ in the book where I pose myself theoretical questions and answer them. And one of them is like, where is the curry in this book? Because it's something that I got asked by a bunch of potential editors.
Yeah, there's no recipe that's like chickpea curry.
Yeah, the word curry does not appear in any recipe. It does not appear in the book except when I'm mocking the word. I just wanted there to be an Indian cookbook out there that just did not have the word curry, that just attempted to erase this out of our vocabulary. You know, I feel like I have this conversation with people at food magazines, not just BA, but it's like so many food magazines are willing to call like a soup that calls for like rosemary and basil and this laundry list of herbs, and yet we're so willing to use curry powder when like I don't think we'd ever call for like a Italian herb seasoning.
Right. We don't ask for a lot. We rarely use onion powder, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet garlic sort of powder. Indian food isn't given that same respect that Western cuisines are.
You are on a mission.
Sort of unintentionally. I didn't set out to do this.
Right. But you noticed it when no one else was.
Yeah. And then I started getting a platform in places like Bon Appetit, in places like The Times, and I realized like, if no one else is going to do this, then like, I might as well say something. And now I'm surrounded by other amazing Indian American writers, people like Khushbu Shah, Sonia Chopra, Tejal Rao, who are just doing unbelievable work. And I just feel so excited to sort of be peers with them and for all of us, and even like, you know, writers of color sort of finally coming up to, you know, say something about the misconceptions around the cuisines that we grew up with and sort of rewriting the narrative that, you know, was never written by us in the first place.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Do we want to talk about roti pizza? The recipe in the book that is the most ish.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say roti pizza is definitely the most ish. That dish is also by far the most made recipe in our house. In fact, my newest From the Test Kitchen video is roti pizza. And roti pizza is like the ultimate entertaining dish, and so it felt so appropriate at the end of that video. I just like walked around Condé Nast and served people roti pizza.
Where was I that day?
I don't know where you were.
Feel deeply left out. No, but I had some at Cookbook Club and it was so fantastic. I loved the potatoes that look like just flowers. So walk us through the recipe. So you have your frozen roti that you got at Patel Brothers.
Start
in the
with
freezer.
Roti, yeah. You thaw it out. You could also use whole wheat tortillas. My mom uses the ones from Central Market, which is a Texas grocery store that we love. And then you score them a few times with a knife. You bake them in the oven. This is sort of the equivalent of like blind baking a pie crust, sort of getting that initial level of crispiness. Like the Krishnas love our pizzas really well done and charred at the crust. So this is that
you don't want
that
floppy
first bake.
Pizza
yeah,
ever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You want it to be sturdy enough to withstand the toppings. And it's not, roti is thin. So you want to make it nice and sturdy so it won't collapse when you layer stuff on. You bake it, and then you put your toppings on. The most popular toppings in my family are really thinly sliced red onions, sharp cheddar cheese, and this, like limey cilantro chutney that we put on top. So we'll put the onions and the cheese, bake it again, bake it until the onions have sort of started to brown at the edges. The crust is crisped and curled and charred, and the cheddar cheese is getting really bubbly and almost like where you start to see those like cheese, like the little like burnt,
yes,
crispy bits on the pan. That's when you know it's ready. And then you drizzle your cilantro chutney on top and cut it into fourths. But there's so many variations, like one with thinly sliced potatoes, Parmigiano Reggiano, and rosemary and sea salt. That one's really good. My dad's personal favorite is like Kalamata olives, feta, and tomatoes. We do one that's just pesto, cracked pepper, and then like big hunks of mozzarella. I've done dessert roti pizza with like baked apples on top and some whipped cream, or like Nutella and strawberries when I was in college. Like, you can kind of go the direction that whatever suits your fancy, but it's one of those endlessly adaptable recipes that when I'm home in Dallas for a limited time and we only have like two free dinners, one of them is very likely going to be roti pizza.
I feel like I could house like three of them.
Yeah, usually my mom, her like, she usually, three a person is about how she, three pizzas a person is sort of how she thinks of it when she's cooking them.
Okay, so now I don't feel so bad about how many I ate at Cookbook Club because they were right in front of me, and I thought, one little triangle.
I mean, even in the video, I think they included this in the video, I like ate one slice, and they were like, why don't you go share it with people? And I'm like, why? Okay. And then I like ate another slice, and I was like, I'll just have a few more slices, and yeah, then I'll go share it with people.
Okay. And then quickly we went in to talk about something really special in the cookbook. I mean, there's lots of very special things, but Ritu's wine pairings.
Uh-huh.
How did that come about? You know, she was already contributing so much from her fashion advice,
yeah,
her embroidered pillow, poop advice. And then she was like, you know what, Priya? We need some wine.
So everything up in this book up until then was sort of, it was my idea for my mom to write down her this sort of Ritu-isms, for my idea for her to write down all her recipes. But the wine appendix is something she just kind of wrote up independently, kind of like extra credit, and just sent it to me and was like, here's a list of all my favorite wines and the kinds of dishes they pair with. Like, do with it what you will. And I sent it to my publishing company because I'd already filed the manuscript for my book. And I was like, can we do something with this? And they were like, this is incredible. Like, we'll just make a little wine appendix and it'll be Ritu's tasting notes and her favorite wines.
I love the photo of her in the beginning of the book where she's holding this like pretty Texas-sized wine glass.
Yeah. My photographer chose that because she was just like, I want you to have a goblet of wine.
Yeah.
And it was 9 o'clock in the morning and they were like, you can just put it back in the bottle. And my mom was just like drinking the wine. She was like, I don't want to waste perfectly good wine.
It's been aerated.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So you know the BA Lightning
round? Yeah, yes. I have heard it before.
All right. Here we go. Olive oil or ghee?
Ghee.
Kolaches or bagels?
Kolaches.
Chai or shikhanji?
Chai.
Did I say it right?
Shikhanji.
Shikhanji.
You're very close.
I wrote it wrong. Late night pizza or late night quesadilla?
Late night quesadilla, definitely.
Raita or peanut chutney?
Peanut chutney.
H-E-B or Buc-ee's?
Oh my God. Oh. I would say Buc-ee's because of the breakfast tacos.
Instant pot or a good old-fashioned Dutch oven?
Instant pot for thal, definitely.
Salt or chaat masala?
Chaat masala, always.
The musical Chicago or Wicked?
Chicago, because I can basically perform a one-woman show of that musical.
That's the next episode of the podcast, actually. Seth's croissants or Seth's babka?
Babka, Seth's babka.
FYI, Seth is Priya's boyfriend who has an Instagram story show. This is very niche, called Seth Bakes, where he bakes incredible things, and we've all got a chance to try. And I thought the croissants were great, personally.
The almond croissants, I think, were really good. The babka just, I loved the sort of the doughy butteriness of it. It was amazing.
And this is controversial, but Whataburger or Shake Shack?
Shake Shack.
Not controversial for you.
I'm like
the Texan?
Only Texan who I think Whataburger is fine, but I love Shake Shack. Texans are really going to come after me after this.
Or maybe they're going to have some soul searching.
Yeah.
Soul searching is the word. And I almost asked if it mom's chai or dad's yogurt, but I feel like that would tear your family apart.
That would tear my family apart.
Don't answer.
But I really think that all of us, including my mom, would say dad's yogurt.
Oh. I'm thinking of the final image in your Instagram story as you were working on the cookbook of your dad taking care of all the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? What is that image to you?
Yeah, my dad doing the dishes dressed in a lungi, which is sort of like a wraparound skirt worn in certain parts of India. They're very breathable. It just sort of reminds me. It just sort of makes me think of the whole book, which is unapologetic and unabashed, and you know, it's not seeking to define the word authentic or be authentic in any way, but it's sort of, it is who we are. It's an Indian story and it's an American story, and I'm really, really proud of it.
Thank you, Priya.
Thanks, Begs.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che, and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.